Alright, you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Dirt, 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 dirt. Y'all out of it. I meant to say, y'all ready for this?
Yeah.
But my brain was like, you're not saying that.
Yeah, dad, or it.
Yeah, dad, or it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Zero Credits, the show where we talk about things. I'm Henry.
And I'm John.
And together we're Henry and John. And we just talk about stuff.
Yep.
Normally we start with a segment, but I feel like I'm going to save that segment for later.
Alright, so how will we start?
I don't know.
How was your day, Henry?
It was kind of boring and arduous, but that's just because I worked.
Yeah.
I did get to meet with a guy and we talked about some of my writings, but we don't have to talk about that, but it is something that happened.
Talked about what?
My writings.
Oh, I thought you said summer writings.
No, like, I slurred it. I said my writings.
Summer writings. I just was, do you think there's different writings for different times of the year?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, I think that's probably true, like.
You write your romances in spring,
mm-hmm.
and then you write your, you know, your romances in summer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the difference between a romance and a romance. It's just how much clothes are on the cover.
And then in the fall, you write your romances.
And then in the winter, you write your eat, pray, loves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Family, friends, fun, faith.
Well, it's more like a woman on her own exploring the world, and then,
okay.
Then she finds a guy she is, and the guy saves her.
Gross.
Look, these are just the four genres that there are.
You know, I've been thinking a lot about this recently.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's more gradient than this, but the year is really split up into four different segments, and people's behavior and their creative output and how they interact with the world is very different depending on which of those segments they happen to be in at the time.
It's true. We're very time-based creatures.
I think so much of it has to do with, I guess, weather. Maybe there's more sun, but, like, think about it. Spring, particularly.
It's creative and overflowing with energy.
Spring is scary and crazy to me because the craziest, like, social or romantic or creative things I ever do always happen in the spring, and they're always crazy, and I don't know what's happening, and people are all over the place.
It's a rebirth of everything. Like, everything's coming back to life. Not just flowers, but also your ideas, and
mm-hmm.
your need to go outside and be in the sun is back because there are no more clouds.
Mm-hmm. I just see so many people who either went through the winter minefield of relationships where they end up breaking up or getting to these weird short-term winter relationships, and those all dissolve in the spring and turn into something else, and
yeah.
Your whole friend group changes over the spring, not with different people, but everyone's attitudinally very different.
In winter, it's always about, like, let's be close, because we have to survive this dark period, so you might, those people who are, like, lonely might try to latch on to somebody, like, together we'll survive the winter, because otherwise if I'm alone, maybe that won't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you get to spring, it's like, oh, I survived. I don't need the support system anymore. I'm going to be adventurous and strike out on my own. So sorry, winter buddy.
Yeah.
It's now time for my spring fling.
Mm-hmm. I see so many of... never mind. I see a lot of those happen.
Yeah.
All over the place.
You know, it's always... it's what? The cliche in the television show. It's like, oh, it's spring. Love is in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's more like... It's spring. We survived the dark hell that is winter.
Yeah.
Let's celebrate by, like, getting together again.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there's so much creative output in the spring, too. My favorite months are probably the winter months or the fall months, just because I'm not a big fan of heat. I sweat a lot and get very tired. I'm not in great shape. In the spring and summer months, there's always this burst of crazy creativity and life that happens in spring, and this relaxation into this low-level energetic laziness in the summer.
Yeah.
Like, in the spring, everything's happening, and in the summer, anything can happen.
The spring is when you do all the work. The summer continues that work, but, you know, it gets hot, so you gotta protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The fall is when you start curtailing your work, start harvesting things and preparing for the winter, which is, let's just try to survive this hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could definitely see the spring being you sow your seeds, the summer You care for them. In the fall, you harvest all this creativity you had for the past 5 to 7 months.
Yeah.
And then after the fall's over...
I mean, everyone kind of dies off and gets into these weird moods and depressions and...
I mean, I am an individual who suffers from SAD, seasonal affective disorder, so the winter does make me very sad.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why I see the spring and the summer as I do, but I think I'm not the only one.
I mean, as a person who's personally very even-keeled throughout the entire year, just, you know, the same level of depression mm-hmm. overall, it is neat to see people who were sad a few months ago bounce back and be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, you know, sometimes you're happy and sometimes you can't just help but hate them.
Yeah. I feel that way about most people most of the time.
Yeah. I mean... I'm not, like, clinically depressed or anything, but it's just, like, my mood is rarely affected by the weather or the seasons.
Yeah. I do have, like, depression, whatever, but it always vacillates. It's always dependent upon something, so I always wax and wane in and out of it.
You're a moon.
I'm a moon.
You're a depression moon.
I'm a moon. But...
So...
It's always interesting to think about. What were you going to say?
This spring, yes. you're feeling all this creative buzz. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking? What are you gonna do?
In terms of creativity?
Sure.
I've definitely gotten back into playing music, which has taken like a 6 or 7 month hiatus.
What? I did not know this. What? Do you, instruments?
I play guitar and keyboard. I like to do drum sequencer things on computers every once in a while. But mostly I just like to fuck around on guitars.
That's cool.
I'm trying to get my electric guitar put back together and repainted and fixed all back up so I can start playing with that again, because I haven't experimented with electric guitar in about a year, maybe. A year and a half.
Yeah.
I have this Ibanez that's so much fun to play.
Ibanez?
Yep.
Sounds like a type of bird.
It is.
Is it?
Guitar bird.
A guitar bird. Well, that's cool. Maybe once you get, like, some of your music stuff in together, you could bring it here and do a little ditty.
Maybe. I was thinking about bringing, like, an acoustic guitar or something here to be like, this is our segment. G chord. I actually only know how to play G chords, just variations of it. I changed the tuning of my guitar so it makes different chords.
Gotcha.
Just with a G chord shape.
That's interesting, and also it seems kind of inconvenient if you want to switch notes really quickly.
Yeah. I mean, people, they'll wait for me to retune my guitar over 10 or 15 minutes so I can play the next chord.
I don't know. It's not a gas station. People don't need to listen to you.
It is a gas station. I play at the gas station.
You play at the gas station.
I play at the Texaco.
Well, because it's like country western inspired music or just...
It's gas inspired music.
Gas inspired music.
Mm-hmm. I just sing the refrain from Jumpin' Jack Flash.
It's a gas, gas,
because
gas.
Because it's a gas.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't know anyone else knew that song.
It's a fairly popular song.
You try quoting it with the crowd we hang out with.
Yeah.
No, everyone looks at you like you're strange.
Try quoting almost anything. Like, nah.
Well, unless it's Back to the Future.
You know, yeah, Back to the Future is a movie that happened. Yeah, music's cool. Want to get back into writing a little bit, but school's not making that terribly easy.
Yeah. Try going to school for writing.
No.
No. I was being... Don't do that, obviously,
okay, yeah.
Because...
I don't want to do that.
The school environment is not set up to handle your creative efforts.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, either that's the only thing you do, or you're very dedicated and you can set off time to do it.
I mean, so many creative programs in school are, you need to build a portfolio to be effective. We're not going to help you do that.
Yeah.
Have fun out there.
I was talking to my friend today, we met to talk about my writing... And he was like, yeah, I thought I was going to come here and work on a novel, but they don't seem too keen on that. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm going to do a collection of short stories in the meantime.
And your friend, of course, I don't want to give away his name on the podcast, but it does rhyme with Beavin Bing.
No, you don't know my friend.
Stephen King.
No.
His name is Stephen King.
No. They're turning that into a movie. You're right. I did meet with someone who rhymes with Beavin...
Idris Elba. That's going to be interesting. I like Idris Elba.
But anyway, this was actually a different friend.
Okay. Stephen King.
I don't know Stephen King.
I probably don't know this friend.
Yeah, you probably don't.
Probably.
I'm getting back into writing a bit. That's what I met with my friend about. He gave me a deadline. He was like, give me a story by this date or else I will harass you.
All right.
Because I ran into him on the street a few weeks ago, and he was like, how's your writing going? And I was... Anytime someone asks me about my writing, I always make sort of the same face and noise, which is like,
mm-hmm.
And so he was like, well, fix that.
Is this friend a particularly prolific author?
He has a book.
Okay, well then you should listen to him.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I took his advice. I went ahead and like revised one of the stories I liked the most and gave it to him. And he was very receptive, gave me some feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like, here's a list of places you should submit this to. So.
Okay, that sounds like one of the most productive creative meetings I've ever heard of.
He was basically like, you've got no excuse, you know, fucking try or, you know, mm-hmm. go home and give up.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, you're right. I have no excuse.
I mean, words to live by.
I feel like with a lot of people, because a lot of writers talk about, like, they've got, like, a friend or something that it kind of keeps them balanced or keeps them going. The person who's mentioned in the thank you section or, like, you know, if they win an award, they're like, thank you so-and-so for all the drive.
Mm-hmm.
I think certain creative people need other people to, like, sort of guide them or, like, at least, you know, hold the writing crop and, like, you know, menace over them and, like, I'm going to hit you unless you, like, produce a story.
I mean, there are different types of people, and I think if you want to draw the line and say there are non-creative people versus creative people, which I think is reductive, but if you want to say that for the sake of argument, there are driven creative people, and there are not.
Yeah.
And I think they exist in the same, or maybe a little bit skewed ratio, as does exist in the normal population, where most people aren't that driven.
It's true. And to make it as a writer, I've been told thousands of times, like, you've got to be one of the most driven people you've ever met.
I mean, it's more important to be driven if you're creative.
I mean, I don't have much drive.
Be driven.
What am I, a car? What am I? A mule?
You're not a car, but you're an engine. An engine for books.
A book engine. What am I, a book mule?
Yes, you are. You're a beast of burden.
I'm gonna burden your beast.
The burden of words.
It's a really hard burden.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna brag or anything. But no, it's dumb. I hate it.
I'm on a career path where I'm not going to be creative, I'm just going to make money. And I love being creative, but sometimes if I'm creative for a very long period, the very sweet parts of creation are just, you know, ripe apricots. They're perfect. But the parts of creation where you sit there and you honestly have no mote of light in your soul to make a new thing happen, that's the worst.
Yeah, I mean... I feel like creativity is kind of like just like a mood where... It's not really, it's like, I don't know.
Mm.
It's delicate.
Mm-hmm.
The feeling of trying to be creative or like, I want to create something new. There's so many factors that can throw you off. And it could be something as small as like, you sit down and like, you shut off everything, but you forget to turn your phone off and you get a text. And it's like, it doesn't matter what that text says. It's just the fact that you got a text removes you from the moment that you were wanting to create in. And mm-hmm. like, you get mad and you throw your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you buy a phone case that literally cannot be broken.
Mm-hmm. The creative phone case.
Yeah.
Creativity is extremely brittle. That's the reason why, for the entirety of human history, we've been coming up for words to describe the frailty of creativity. You know, animi, muses.
Yeah.
Inspirations. We talk about these things that allow us to create because essentially, in the structure we've created in society, creation is a kind of forced insanity that we impose upon ourselves for a period of time. We're like, we need to take ourselves outside of the structures we're currently thinking in and make new ones.
Pretty much.
And that's the hardest thing anyone has ever done.
You have to remove yourself from the world to, like, create a new thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And,
it's hard.
If the muses exist... Or existed. They're dead and gone now. Like,
in my perception, muses were just ways of people describing how creativity is fickle, it's ephemeral, it comes, it goes, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cling film, and you just, like, throw a rock through it when you look out the window.
What's cling film?
Like, saran wrap.
Oh, it's saran wrap.
It's just a thin film that you try to maintain like a bubble and you can't pop it.
Is Saran Wrap the brand? Is that one of those Band-Aid situations?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Saran Wrap is a brand.
I did not know that.
I think Reynolds now owns the market, interestingly.
Ryan?
Ryan.
Reynolds. So.
Yep.
Creative talk.
It's been a while.
That's why people tune into this.
I should hope so.
Hopefully.
Music sucks and is hard. Actually composing things is maybe the hardest thing I've ever done.
I have a small story. I used to have, it's actually over there, I have one of those MacBooks. And MacBook, or Apple stuff, comes with like GarageBand and all this other stuff that can turn your keyboard, your laptop keyboard into a musical keyboard. And I downloaded like a little filter thing that would make my keyboard sound like 8-bit chiptune. And so I was like, I don't need to learn music, I just need to use my 8-bit chiptune thing and try to make like a cool video game song. And so I sat down for about an hour and like I thought I had it, and like it was sounding good. It was sounding like regal and elegant. I'm like, oh cool, this will be like a royal video game song or whatever. And like I had my friend come in and listen to it, and it was like, this is just fucking noise. This is bullshit.
Yep.
But what is this? Like, well, let me see like your program. Like, you just hit buttons randomly. And I was like, but I thought that's what I thought that I don't know music, so I thought I could pull this off, and then I never touched music again.
I mean, I think your friend might have been in the wrong. It might have sounded fine.
I have no idea now.
Any combination of notes is music. Sound, no matter what, can be music, but there are certain structures of noises that people find to be more, like, orally pleasing. That's why chord structures exist, things like that.
This guy played the guitar, so he was looking for, like, a 4-4 rhythm or something like that. He was looking for the structure of music to be there. And me, I was just like, beep, boop, bop, bop, beep, boop, boop, beep, beep. And I'm like, I'm just having fun with chiptune.
Yeah, and I think you were in the right in that situation.
Yeah.
I hate people who do shit like that. But also, never take the advice of guitar players seriously, because most of them have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he was one of the ones that could actually read music.
Oh, well, then never mind. He actually probably knew what he was talking about.
So it's not like I could be like, you just read the tabs, and he's like... Because he was a computer science major who then also, like, double majored or minored in classical guitar playing.
Yeah, okay.
And I was just like, all right, you're cool.
Okay, that combination is probably the most insufferable double major I could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
That's like saying, I have a double major in electronic engineering and jazz percussion.
That sounds awesome, but also awful.
Yeah, it's awful.
Let me complete painting the picture of this guy. He was also the first militant atheist I've ever met.
Well, of course. I mean, classical guitar and computer programming, he sounds like a militant atheist.
I lived with him for a year. And we had one big fight because he kept watching videos about this historian guy who never cited his sources, who would just be like, yeah, this video is about how Catholicism caused the Holocaust. I was like, you can't say that.
Yeah, no.
And he's like, no, but he's like, he's walking, and I sat and I listened to him, to like, my roommate walk me through this guy's argument. I'm like, but there's a big leap between what the Catholic Church did and what Adolf Hitler did.
Yep. If you could take every YouTube, like, opinion piece video and apply the rules of logical rhetoric and debate to it...
Yeah.
You couldn't pay attention to anything on YouTube, because it's all just people being total dumbasses.
I mean, like, I didn't have the vocabulary for it now, but... I mean, then, but now I could be like... That's this fallacy and that fallacy, and correlation is not causation. Yep.
The number of times I've seen videos like that on YouTube, and essentially what the author of the video will say is, they'll make a statement, they will say, and given that, it's not hard to imagine that unrelated statement.
Yeah.
Unrelated statement with connecting theme. It's like, that's not rigor at all.
You can't hold up a pear and a mouse and be like, because this pear grew like this and it's all moldy, this mouse will also die. And it's just like, no, that they're completely different things.
Yeah, it's this pear got bigger as it got older. So did this mouse. Thus, it wouldn't be hard to imagine.
Time makes you bigger.
Time makes you bigger, and this mouse gets moldy.
It's moldy mouse.
It's very dumb, and I hate it. Yeah.
So, but music is hard.
Music's very hard. I've taken a couple classes on it, but I've never put that much into it. And I did play classical guitar for a while, and I still prefer stuff like that. Whatever. Music's hard.
Yeah. I played the trombone for 2 years. And
nice.
I learned how to read bass clef, which translates into I can't read anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I gave it up for English.
That's the right move, I think. Yeah. Probably. You seem to have ended up in a good place.
No complaints. It's not like, oh man, I've never been in a situation where, like, if I could play the trombone, this moment would be so much better.
I mean, to be honest, basically, that cleft path in your history is basically you sitting around going, where can I find a writing work? Versus alternate universe, where can I find a trombone work?
The alternate universe version of me is somehow listening to this and going, like, a tear.
Yep.
Is falling into his glass of champagne because he's, like, the richest trombone player in the world. And he's just like, I feel bad for alternate Henry. If only he stuck with it.
He's living on, like, a mansion on an island in New Orleans.
And the island's shaped like a trombone because why not?
Yeah, of course.
Man.
So, segments.
Yeah. Do you want to do a segment? So, John, you want to do a segment?
Yeah, what
did
you
watch?
This is a segment called What Did You Watch, in which we talk about things that we watched.
With our eyes.
Not our ears.
It's true.
So, what did you watch, Henry?
Oh, I go first. All
you
right.
Don't have to, but go ahead.
So, recently I sat down, and I was like, I'm going to watch a movie on Netflix, on HBO Go, on Amazon Prime, all in the same day.
Man, what an accomplishment.
It didn't happen.
Okay.
I
even if you reach for the moon, at least you land among the stars.
So I landed on the stars of Netflix,
mm-hmm.
and I saw this random little recommended for me movie pop up called Mind Game.
Oh, I see.
It's an anime movie
mm-hmm.
from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I know nothing about it, haven't looked it up. I don't know who did it, who stars in it, nothing like that. I just know I watched it, it was trippy as hell, and I loved it, and it was great.
I'm a big Mind Game booster. I watched it quite a few years ago, back when it was making the limited amount of waves that it was making when it was first released here, and oh boy, Mind Game is real good.
Yeah. So for like a little basic story thing, there's this, a manga artist who happens to run into like a childhood friend he hasn't seen in years and the childhood friend's father got mixed up with the mob, with loan sharks and all. And then it all kind of culminates in this scene in like this restaurant where the mob finally tracks down the family. And then it kind of goes off the rails from there in like this really cool storytelling perspective, but what really gets you is the animation style
mm-hmm.
is crazy and awesome, and there's these weird like cutaways to what seems like rotoscoped faces that are overlaid over the characters' faces to show like this is the actor's face of the character that like this is representation and symbol in one.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy and I loved it.
The animation of Mind Game really deserves an additional special mention, because in a lot of animation, no matter where it comes from today, but especially Japanese animation, it tends to be very very like herky jerky, very standstill, very limited elements move at a time.
Yeah.
And Mind Game is very fluid and colorful, and it's all of a piece.
Yeah.
In a really great way.
This is off topic, but I've recently been seeing some like clips from, I forget his name. It's like Ito or something, but like he's the animator that people always claim or like accuse him of rotoscoping, but he never has.
Mm.
And all of his stuff is very fluid, very lifelike movements. He did the opening to the Cowboy Bebop movie, on Heaven's Door.
Yep. Fantastic opening, really good movie.
Yeah. But a lot of the animation style in this reminded me of that, only like on the opposite end of the spectrum.
Mm.
So that the guy I'm talking about is a very realistic animator.
Mm-hmm.
And this was very like out there, very abstract, mm-hmm. but still fluid, still in the world, but not.
Mm-hmm. When Japanese animation gets it right, it goes, and it happens a few times in Mind Game, and it, there's this other movie that's really, really not as good, but the animation is also good at times, called Dead Leaves. And it goes back to these classic styles of American animation with action lines and non, like, perfectly physiologically accurate movement, just movement that communicates a movement. It doesn't necessarily have to be realistic.
Yeah.
And, man, butt shotgun.
Butt shotgun.
Butt shotgun happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mind Game's really good.
What I really think makes Mind Game so good is that the opening is just like a series of really quick scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And like, for a while, you're not sure, am I seeing the same character in all these scenes? I don't know what I'm seeing, but I'm absorbing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then throughout the film, there'll be like little reminders. Like, the first time you meet the dad,
mm-hmm.
he's like a bald drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, for a second, it flashes back to that opening scene of this guy with long hair dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, with arrows pointing at him, like, this is that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, throughout the film, through, like, this really quick montage of time passing, you see all, like, they're explaining, we showed mm-hmm. you this, and mm-hmm. now it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the movie, it shows you it again. And the movie starts over a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, it's got this weird circular feeling
mm-hmm.
to it.
Mm-hmm. A lot of Mind Game is circular in action, which I really appreciate. And going to the shortcuts at the start of it, I think that that's something that Japanese movies in general, including Japanese animation, tend to do really well, is like the intellectual montage.
Yeah.
The idea that they have these not necessarily literally interconnected vignettes that happen in order, but they're thematically connected. You know, a shot of one thing to a shot of another thing. It doesn't move you through space logically, but it moves you through space thematically. It creates a feeling.
Yeah.
You know, like in Ghost in the Shell, it has some of the greatest intellectual montages that happen, just cityscapes, and it can communicate a tremendous amount of mood and feeling in 6 or 7 quick cuts around the city.
Mm-hmm.
And Blade Runner did that too.
Oh, yeah.
Which is maybe where Ghost in the Shell got it from, but a lot of Satoshi Kon stuff, Paprika, Perfect Blue, stuff like that, really heavy into the intellectual montage, to the point where, later in his career, and a little bit earlier, he clearly started to understand that the intellectual montage was something that was well understood enough by audiences to be easily digestible, so he started to play with intellectual montages and transitions to be like, it seems like it's communicating a tone. Someone moves aside and you realize that it's spatially connected, but not thematically connected.
Oh. So he knew the audience got it, so he started playing with it mm-hmm. as like a, just, I'm having fun.
Yeah. Like, he can show a woman drinking tea.
Yeah.
In a very Baroque setting, and then cut, and it's a man on a train, and you're like, oh, he's communicating a mood. Then the train sways, and he sways aside, and you see the woman in the Baroque tea thing is just on the train, just drinking tea, and it's like, You weren't communicating a mood at all.
Nope, this is just a setting.
Yep.
But, yeah, you've talked about the intellectual montage before, I think.
And it's one of my favorite things to go to.
I think Mind Game was one of the first instances I had of experiencing that sort mm-hmm. of thing. Mm-hmm. Where it's not, the things you're seeing are all related somehow, but you don't know quite how. It's not like the opening of Watchmen, where you're seeing a timeline of events,
mm-hmm.
one after the other, in order.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there's a lot of stuff going on. You're the first time, and even like the last time you see it, you're still not quite sure what characters are in what scenes, who is what, what's mm-hmm. happening.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got a better understanding, and it's kind of like you need that circular feeling to be like, maybe I should rewatch this
mm-hmm.
so I can see if I can catch more.
Mm-hmm.
But
and the intellectual montage is something that once you start noticing it, it becomes hard to not notice it. It's in a lot of things, mostly foreign things.
It's maybe it's just the way of like, that's just the way they set up their stories, is like, here's like a little brief preview of things, but
mm-hmm.
in a way you're not gonna, it doesn't spoil anything, it's mm-hmm. not gonna make any sense
until
you see it unfold.
I just think that as Americans we get spoiled by this American progression through a narrative where it's action to action, interaction to interaction. It's just this chain that happens, you know, like the start of Watchmen, just this series of events that happen. Whereas there's much less importance on that in other countries. There's much more of an importance through telling a story through a whole space rather than a section of that space where something is transpiring.
It could be like a cultural perception of time, whereas, you know, at least in like the English language, time is very much a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people, you know, time is a flat circle. Thank mm-hmm. you, Matthew McConaughey, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But like the way we talk about time is like we're doing something now, we'll be doing something later. Well, we, you know, we've done something in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in other languages, and I don't have the experience for this, so I'm not quite sure, but I do know, like, the Navajo think of time as, like, a circle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they describe it. That's how their language treats it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know enough to say about, you know, Japanese culture, about mm-hmm. how they treat time, but it seems like their storytelling and the way, like, the events that they're sort of going through have more of a circular nature,
mm-hmm.
but I'm, you know, zero credentials.
I mean, that's both of us, but I did a bit of reading about it at some point, and it made the argument that perhaps there's this point A, point B, point C progression through a lot of things in Western culture, because we tend to have, and this is a bit of a stretch, and I don't entirely believe it, but I think that's interesting. The idea that we have this, basically, like a fairy tale structure to our belief system, not trying to be offensive and say, oh, religion's a fairy tale, but we have, like, we're born, we live our lives, we die, afterlife. Like, it is a straight line.
Okay, yeah.
Whereas a lot of cultures have a more holistic approach to, like, spirituality in their lives. Like, you were something before you were born, you are something while you're alive, you're something after you die, like...
Okay, so put it into maybe a reductive thing, but like a reincarnation.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah. The idea that it wasn't beginning, middle, end. It was something, something, something.
Yeah.
And there was no beginning or end, no end.
It's like multiple beginnings, which renders the term beginning, you know, moot. Because mm-hmm. usually beginnings are one.
Yeah.
All right. And then you've got the, what are they called? The Trafmaldagorians?
Whoa.
From...
Whoa.
Slaughterhouse-Five?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Where yeah. it's time is ever stretching in both directions forever. Mm-hmm. A person who dies still exists. They're still alive in the past, still doing, like, their thing in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they never mourn their dead, and they laugh at people who do, or they point out how silly that is because mm-hmm. they are in the past still existing.
Mm-hmm.
There's just different ways to think about time.
Mm-hmm.
I would want to see what a Trafmaldagorian story would look like, but that's kind of what Slaughterhouse-Five is.
Yeah, the entire idea behind Slaughterhouse-Five is, you know, becoming unstuck in time, which, you know...
is the first line.
It's a very catchy beginning to a book, and maybe a less catchy but more accurate beginning would be Billy Pilgrim has become, not unstuck in time, but he's...
everywhere at once.
Yeah, He's experiencing time in its entirety and not in a linear fashion.
Yeah.
Not a catchy way to begin a book.
No. But also, bringing this back to Watchmen, since I brought it up,
mm-hmm.
that's what Dr. Manhattan, that's how he perceived time.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I never made that connection until just now.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, I understood how Mr. Watchmen... No. I understood how Dr. Manhattan perceived time, and I just finished Slaughterhouse-Five. I never... held up the two under the same lens, I guess.
When I was a wee lad of 10 or 11 years old, I read Watchmen for the first time. I was like, oh, so Dr. Manhattan's just like a holier-than-thou dick? And when I when I reread it as an adult, like 17, 18 later on, I reread it about once a year.
Yeah.
You start to see his aloofness, his seeming aloofness, and his uncaringness to be what it is in... you can't be seen as a compassionate human being if you see everything at once.
Yeah.
If you exist if you don't exist in the continuity of time and you exist in the entirety of time, of course you're not going to be a caring person, because why would you mourn the dead? Why would you stop someone from dying?
In the grand scheme of things, one life versus the entirety of existence
mm-hmm.
is very small.
Yeah. I mean, when he's talking about the chaotic geography of another planet, and it's one of the few things he honestly seems to care about.
Yeah.
Because it takes millions and millions of years to create, it's truly random, and it means just as much as everything else if you view time as this line that you can exist in at any point.
Yeah.
Watchmen's a good book.
It's one of the best graphic novels I've ever read.
It's one of the best novels.
I mean, yeah, yeah. I always qualify it as a graphic novel, but it's made it into the canon as just a novel.
Mm-hmm. Although deserves it.
A lot of professors and academic types still qualify it with graphic just to be like, Oh, it's a comic book. Oh. Give Alan Moore his Oscar.
Give Alan Moore his Peabody.
He's probably won a bat. Is he British? No, he's American.
I honestly don't know.
I was going to say he probably won a BAFTA, but...
He won the American-British Probability Matrix Award of the BAFTA-Oscar.
Yeah, the BAFTA. BAFTA's for television. He doesn't do anything with television.
Never mind.
What does he do?
He wrote Mr. Television.
Mr. Television.
Mr. Telly, as they call it.
One random factoid before we get off this line of discussion. Mm-hmm. Alan Moore famously has not watched any of the adaptations of his works.
Good.
Except for two episodes of Justice League Unlimited.
Wait.
They adapted two of his arcs in Justice League Unlimited.
Oh, I see, okay.
And he was like, yeah, that's pretty good.
What if he saw the movie?
Which one?
The Watchmen movie. I bet he would say, they tried.
He's more of a raving, lunatic than he is, a... Yeah. A sensible person, so it'd be like, it's shit, is what it'll say.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll probably be like, yeah, it's that's why I'm not involved in the adaptations of my works.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't work.
Last line in this line of thinking, I'll say this, I saw Batman versus Superman.
You can't talk about it.
And I'm not talking about it.
I haven't seen it.
I'm not talking about it. I'm just saying.
I gotta cover my ears now.
Don't cover your ears. An important thing to remember going into it. Zack Snyder really tries. In everything he does that's based on source material, he really does make a good, honest effort.
All right.
He's just like a kid who really honestly tries and gets C's.
It would be like if someone gave me hey, we want you to adapt anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, okay, I'm gonna do what I want to do, but
yep.
No one will like it.
He has his flourishes, but he's honestly I really do want to be faithful to this. I really do. And
it's
it makes me happy and sad at the same time. Well, because I don't like his work.
Well, I haven't seen it.
You should.
I probably will soon.
Good.
But not yet.
So what did you watch, Henry? Wait.
I'm going to ask what you watched, but you can't talk about Batman vs. Superman.
All right, I'll tell you what I watched.
What did you watch?
It's a little game, a little video game.
Oh, okay.
Called Stardew Valley.
Stardew Valley.
It's a video game on Steam. It's...
$20.
$20. What you do is you farm, and you talk to people, and it's... If you ever played a game like Harvest Moon, it's a lot like that.
Yeah.
It looks a lot like a Super Nintendo game, if you know what those look like. It's so hard to talk about this game without being reductive.
Yeah.
It has a ton of content. It's a lot of fun. It's made by one guy.
That's the impressive part.
Yeah, that's crazy.
One guy who worked as a ticket ripper at a movie theater,
mm-hmm,
just sat down over the course of years and made this game.
How crazy would it be if the one ticket ripper from our local movie theater who everyone loves was that guy?
I would be impressed.
There's a ticket ripper in our local area that people just love. He's very interesting and great. Anyway.
He's very energetic.
Very. Extremely.
Alright.
Anyway.
So Stardew Valley. Let's start off with Harvest Moon.
Alright.
Is this a game where you inherited a farm from your grandfather?
Or whatever.
And Harvest Moon 64.
Oh yeah,
sure. The one I'm talking about. It was limited in what you could do. You could raise animals, you could raise crops and stuff, you could, mm-hmm, marry five girls or whatever.
Yeah.
There were events, there were scripted things.
Mm-hmm.
How does Stardew Valley compare and build to Harvest Moon 64?
It compares and builds to something like Harvest Moon, which is just this fairly simple game where you dig the ground, you plant crops, you water them, you have relationships with people. It does it in maybe the most barbaric way you possibly could, where it takes literally everything that Harvest Moon has and just dumps everything on top of it. It's like, you had this, I have this, and three times more of it.
Okay.
It does it in the most, brute force method, very little nuance.
Interesting.
It says, this Harvest Moon game had something where you could go in a cave and fight monsters. I have that. Cave is 1,000 stories deep. it makes everything 10 times bigger. Relationships have 10 times more things going on.
Yeah.
You have way more farm, way more upgrades and shit you can do.
So it was basically what if Harvest Moon 64 had no limits?
Yeah. I mean, there are limits, but at the point I am in the game, I've been playing for about 9 hours, which is more than I've played a video game in a long time, which I'm bad at playing video games. But if you just look at it, I don't know if I'm ever going to reach some of those limits.
Wow.
I mean, there are, like...
Is that intimidating, or is that just, like... I don't know.
So, this is actually why I brought it up, because I think it's a fairly interesting thing to talk about, but I might be crazy, is, A, when I start a video game that has... Or when I start anything, a book, a movie, and it has a lot of overhead, a lot of things that are about to happen, like a movie that's 3 hours long, like a Tarkovsky movie or something, or a, I don't know, Game of Thrones book,
yeah.
Or Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
All right.
You see what's ahead of you, and always the hardest part is, like, pedaling your bike up that hill to start going down it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take long, but it's very hard.
Yeah.
Because when you start Stardew Valley, it does not mince words that you have a hell of a climb ahead of you, because you get to your farm, and you have this massive, like, plot of land that you can cultivate, and it is covered in stumps and rocks and trees and logs and ponds and brush. There's nothing that isn't completely overcome with vegetation of some kind.
Wow.
And you have to carve it out. You have to cut down trees individually, smash rocks individually, to make a little plot of land for a couple vegetables. Then you do it again and again and again. And when you go into town, there's, you know, 28 people. More people can move in later.
Oh.
And you have relationships with them. They each have different things to say every day. They move around town, are in different places every day, doing different things. They have hobbies. And I spent the better part of 3 weeks in the game giving presents to one person. And it put one little heart next to her. There's, like, 10 hearts that you can fill up. It takes so long.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and every person has a unique arc. They have, like, a story. There's a novelist who, the better friends you become with him, the more progress you help him make on his novel.
That's... Alright.
Yeah. Everything has something in it.
So it's like Harvest Moon times 1,000.
Yeah, it's Harvest Moon on, like, crazy illegal steroids.
Wow.
And what I was going to say, the second part that I quite like about this that makes me think about myself and why I brought it up, is I think that just deep down within me, or at least maybe at this point in my life, I just like things to be, like provincial or patrochial, but not in a derogatory way. I like things to be limited in scope.
Yeah.
Like, I like them to be narrow but deep. I like the idea that I can have this farm, and I can spend time just cutting down trees. There's no greater importance to that. It's just serving this little cycle I have in my brain of, I want this to be pretty, so I can plant crops here, and I can sell the crops, and then get new crops, and I can play with my dog, and I can give him some water. And I just like things to be manageable and small. I don't like things to rush through a million characters and a million locations.
Yeah.
I like things to be, you know... I wonder why that is.
I think it might have something to do with, like, sort of growing older, you know?
Yeah.
You get these game developers who are promising you the moon, you know? It's like, you see that mountain, you can climb it.
Mm-hmm.
They want to give you everything. But what ends up happening is you end up with a game you never finish.
Yeah.
You buy Fallout 4, you played it for 60 hours, and you just never beat it, and mm-hmm. you're probably not going to go back to it.
Mm-hmm.
With something like Stardew Valley, it's like, yeah, you can do anything, but you've got, like, this sort of main kind of component of the game that you're mm-hmm. focused on.
Yeah.
Make your farm good.
And you could do anything.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
But and its limits, it becomes limitless.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in these other big games that are just too broad to get that sort of depth,
mm-hmm.
it's like their limitless appearance mm-hmm. is really restricted just by the fact that it's not limitless, but it's just too big to sort of complete.
Mm-hmm. Just when I was young, I remember the one thing I wanted out of any book or movie or video game was, like, the whirlwind adventure.
Yeah.
All the locations, characters, things. I loved the idea of that. Now, when I play a video game like Stardew Valley, I just want, like, the quiet appreciation I have for walking past a tree and seeing that a character is playing a flute by the tree. I don't talk to that person, I just keep on going.
Yeah.
Just these quiet little moments. I like having these known variables that surround me that I can interact with however I want. And I don't want to, like, move laterally through this massive world full of characters and interactions.
I don't know, man.
I don't know.
I think it might just be a symptom of growing older. It's like, yeah. the kid in you wants to go explore and, like, you know, defeat all the monsters, meet all these people.
Mm-hmm.
The adults, it's like, that's a lot of effort. Let's just make a potato. I mean, like, I'm flute guy, I ain't got time for that.
I mean, you're not wrong, because even in books, I put in a good effort to start reading the most recent Game of Thrones book.
Yeah.
And even those books aren't the most egregious at introducing a ton of content, but they are very long. But compared to something I'm reading right now, which is Joan Didion's Play It As It Lays,
yeah.
I'm much more enjoying this novel. It has about 8 characters in it. That's it. It's very simple language. The character relationships are interesting. And that's not to say the character relationships in a bigger, more expansive book aren't interesting. I crack it open and I feel exhausted. I just want to have something I know. And that sucks, because I don't want to be that old person who's like, I don't know what a TiVo is.
But eventually I think we all sort of grow into that person.
I don't want to be that person.
I remember when we had cell phones that had screens and computers. Now you're just walking around and projected in front of your face. Mm-hmm. Magic! Demon magic!
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to be that, but I mean, guess we all will be.
The older we get, the more responsibility, the more we feel, like, the need to be stable,
mm-hmm.
the more we want stability, the less we want change.
Mm-hmm.
I think at a certain point when you're growing up and become an adult, you're just like, I've got my job, I've got my bank account, nothing more can change.
Mm-hmm.
Or else, you know, bad things happen. I'm not secure anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe it is a sense of security.
I don't know.
I like having my own little virtual farm and my parsnips and my relationship with this woman and my dog. Who? Okay, quick aside.
Yeah.
Less deep. One of the best things about this game is it will randomly name things if you don't want to name them. And you just hit a little randomize button, and it's maybe one of the most robust random name generators I've ever seen.
Okay.
So, I had a dog, and I hit the random name generator 3 times because I thought it was funny. And it gave me 3 names. The first one, which I did not pick, was Flubert.
Flubert!
The second one, which I did not pick, was No.
It's the word no?
N-O. No. And the third one, which I picked, was Runover.
Oh no, Runover the dog.
His name is Runover the dog. Yep.
Oh, come here, Runover.
Yeah, I looked through more name things. It's fantastic. Meepert? Chacho was one of them. Just these great random computer names.
Wow.
It's great.
That sounds great.
Yeah. You should buy Stardew Valley.
So Stardew Valley.
Stardew Valley. It's on Steam for about $15 or $20, something like that.
I don't remember.
I want to say it's like $15.
Stardew Valley and Mind Game.
2 things that you should experience. I highly recommend both.
You could play Stardew Valley while you watch Mind Game.
You could, but don't use a scythe on your parsnips. Scythe?
A scythe?
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 I've never known how to pronounce that.
You're talking about the short, like, sickle thing?
Yeah.
A sickle.
No, the long sickle.
Oh, a long sickle.
Like the Grim Reaper uses.
A scythe is like those... A scythe is the martial art weapon.
So it's a scythe?
I think it's a scythe.
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 Okay, yeah, I've never known how to pronounce that.
Wow.
Yep, I had a Dungeons & Dragons character when I was 11 years old who had
a scythe?
A scythe.
Or size.
He had a scythe.
They're like hand things.
Scythe.
Oh no, a scythe is the trident, the small trident dagger.
Oh, is that
I
it?
I think that's a scythe.
Okay.
A scythe is, of course, like the Grim Reaper.
Yeah, I never knew how to pronounce that.
Ah, well, now you know.
Sweet.
John learned something on 0 credits, and so can you.
Now I have more credits than before. We have to change the name of the podcast.
To still 0 credits, because the tax man's gonna want those credits from you.
Fuck.
Yeah, it's income tax.
Man, I took it. Whatever. Let's take a break.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back after this short message from our commercial.
Did you...
What?
You updated the Twitter with just the word Twitter?
No, I didn't do that.
I think you did.
I may have been working out.
I think I was standing next to you.
You know, I wonder if our fans can tell our tweets apart.
I use hashtags. You're right.
Hey, Henry.
Oh, hi there, John.
You know what we need to do to keep this podcast afloat?
Stop doing so much cocaine?
Oh, no. That's the only thing that keeps us afloat.
Oh, good.
The only thing that floats my boat is coat? Coat. The only thing that floats my coat is boat. Boy. Anyway, this is a commercial.
Hi, commercial.
Today, we're doing a commercial for a friend of mine. He's got a new website for us.
Okay.
And it's called Hot or Not Characters in Famous Literature. .com.
Hot or not famous characters in literature.com?
Yeah, hot or not characters famous.com.
Hot or not famous.com.
Famous or not famous characters from literature.com. And I wanted to read you a couple examples.
Alright.
So the way it works is I give you a character from antiquity, from antiquated literature, or famous literature. And you say hot or not.
All right.
Or famous or not famous.
So wait, I choose hot or not and then famous or not famous?
Yes.
All right. I like it. Let's peruse the site.
All right. Let me just click on this one here.
Click.
Jane Eyre.
Jane Eyre. I'm going to say hot.
And?
Not famous.
Bingo.
Bing, bing, bing.
You got it.
How much do I win?
If you get 5, you get $50.
Oh.
Number 2.
Here we go.
All right. Click.
Clack.
Captain Ahab.
Captain Ahab. Ooh. I'm gonna go with hot.
Yes.
And not famous.
Bingo!
Oh, wow!
Perfect.
Man.
All right. Click.
Third one.
The Couple from John Steinbeck's The Pearl.
Ooh.
It's now, a twofer.
Now, both of them.
Both of them.
So the woman is hot, but not famous.
Mm-hmm.
But the man of the couple?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, man. He's hot, but not famous.
That's 4.
What?
All right.
You're kidding me.
And if you want to get in on that hot or not action, you should look this website up made by my friend, Steve.
And just remember, it's called Antiquity Characters Hot or Not Literature.
Hot or famous or antiquity knots. Famous or not hot.
.com. Really simple to remember. You get it right every time you say it. Mm-hmm. Just go on there. Do they have to pay for anything?
Yes, membership is $100 a month.
Okay, and if you use the code zero credits,
it's $110 a month.
And you'll get a coupon that clarifies that it does indeed add $10 to the price.
Yes.
So use that and we'll get a little slice for our pockets.
Thanks.
We love you.
Okay, well, that's a little much for me, but, you know, your relationship with the readers, the listeners, is your business. The viewers.
You need to commit sometime, man.
I'm gonna go buy some cigarettes. Well, that sure was a break.
Man, do I feel refreshed from that break?
I drank a whole glass of ice water.
And I poured a new glass of water that you'll hear me drink throughout this last half of the show.
Didn't one of our presidents die from eating cucumber sandwiches and drinking a bunch of ice cold milk?
Is that true? Which one?
Tippy Canoe and Tyler too.
That's a ticket. That's a ticket.
What?
They used to have like little slogans for the ticket, you know, like vice president and president.
Yeah.
Tippy Canoe and Tyler too was the name. Like that was a slogan for that ticket.
Yeah, I'm just saying, whatever was on that ticket, he died from cucumbers and milk.
Which one? Tyler?
Yeah.
Which one's the president?
Tyler.
Who's?
James Tyler.
It's not a real person.
I'm not going to fact check this, but I'm almost 100% sure we had a president who died from cucumbers and milk.
While he was president or after?
Don't know.
Zero credits.
Zero credits.
That's the fastest we've gone from credibility to no credibility.
I said that whole statement knowing full well that what I was saying probably never happened. But for some reason my brain, when I said ice cold water, I was like, yeah, we had a famous US president who died when he ate a cucumber sandwich and drank some cold milk.
So wait, did the milk cause the cucumbers to react in such a way that he died?
Either this is a fact, at least in part, or I have a brain tumor. One of the two.
Well then, so you heard it here, folks. Apparently we had a president who might have died from eating cucumber sandwiches and drinking cold milk.
Ice cold milk. That's very important. Man, a glass of ice cold milk sounds good right now.
That's a shame.
I should eat a cucumber sandwich.
No, he'll die. No, John.
Slurp, slurp, slurp. Arg.
He turned into a pirate.
Yarr. Anyway.
So.
What's up?
I don't know. What do you want to talk about?
We talked about creativity.
We did.
We talked about patrochialism.
We did.
Really covering all of our bases.
We covered the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
We covered a movie and a video game.
That's true.
And now we're recapping everything we've said in the past 2 hours.
True. Let's do a real quick segment.
All right, real quick
segment. State of the Human Address.
A State of the Human Address!
Real quick.
Yeah. Thank you, Natalie, for naming that.
Yeah. Okay, so new name, State of the Human Address, brought to you by our friend Natalie.
All right.
So my State of the Human Address for today is I want to bring you a good and then a bad, as we usually do, but I want to bring you a good, then a bad, then a summary.
Okay.
So let's see, a good thing that I saw humanity do. Oh, this is a toughie.
It was your segment.
It's true, I should have come prepared.
I thought you had something.
All right, a good thing that I saw humanity do was I was watching this YouTube video where a man made his own lathe out of wood.
Ooh.
And then proceeded to make a captive ring rattle for his baby or something like that, but I find his videos super mesmerizing. His name is Matthias Wandel, and he's this super skilled Canadian woodworker.
Okay.
And the good thing he did was he took this really old art and continues it in the modern day with modern machinery. He's a super talented guy who's been doing this his whole life.
That's awesome.
Bad thing that humanity did.
All right.
Today I took a major standardized test that I have to take to graduate from school.
The ETS.
The ETS, because business, whatever. And, yeah, I had to take that. And why does humanity do that? Why do we still think tests are the correct way to judge whether or not someone knows material?
What would you suggest?
I don't know, interviews?
Interviews?
I think interviews are a good way to...
But that tests whether or not you're going to get a gerb.
Which is basically why I'm in school.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong.
But the test was very stupid. It was, remember this thing that you learned the definition of 3 years ago. It was a test you could not study for, and I understand that if you want to, you know, skim the cream off the top and be like, this is the high notes of everything you learn in your education, let's just see how much you remember. But I've never felt like I really learn anything particularly well when I just want to memorize it and regurgitate it.
Yeah.
And most of the time when I answered questions, I was just kind of guessing. I never felt like I was exercising real knowledge, except when they were asking questions that, like, I had taken a class about in the last, like, year. Other than that, I don't feel like I was just making a series of educated guesses, which I don't think I'd ever be called to do that in the real world.
Probably not.
So my State of the Human Address today is...
Okay.
Instead of dedicating yourself to learning rote memorized things and executing those on tests, you should try to be a creative person and dedicate your life to creating things in your field. And no matter what you do, put your heart and soul into it, because the only way you actually learn anything is to care about it.
Alright, I can agree with that. I like how your good and bad thing and then your message were all sort of related.
Nice. You do it.
They had a theme. Oh, I have to do this now. I thought it was just going to be you. Alright, so I have to start off with a bad thing?
Yeah, you can start with a good thing.
I have to start off with a good thing.
Yeah, constructive criticism.
Yours was all thematic.
It wasn't thematic until the end.
How do I make mine thematic?
Just say two unrelated things, then tie them together hastily at the end.
How do I find a good thing?
If it's easier for you to think of a bad thing, you can do that.
How do I find a bad thing?
They're everywhere.
What do you mean? All these good things in the world. All right. A good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this client. I'm not going to, you know, divulge his name or anything, but he's come in the past 2 weeks working on, like, scholarships and grants. He's getting, like, a master's in business, and he's trying to get his foot out into the real world, you know, get it like a CPA or an internship or something. He's basically casting as wide a net as possible. He's doing the next step thing that we have to do, that mm-hmm. everybody has to do. And I've worked with him on like two essays before, and at a certain point, all this material starts becoming a little samey,
mm-hmm.
and he sort of recognized that. So what he did was he wrote an essay for why he should be allowed to, like, attend Tulane University for their business school.
Mm-hmm.
And he took that, changed all instances of Tulane to the letter CPA,
mm-hmm.
and then was going to apply for, like, a scholarship or something to study for his CPA exam.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the good thing.
Yeah.
And I'll explain why that's a good thing.
Okay.
The bad thing, I guess, that I've seen lately, that I saw recently, that happened, it exists, and it's real.
Mm-hmm. It exists in real life.
And it's a bad... Oh, okay. Here's one. I'm gonna get political for a second.
Perfectly fine.
The bad thing I saw was that... Here's the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie Sanders challenged Hillary Clinton to a debate in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, you debate, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You have to debate.
Yeah.
It's one of the things you do during an election cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary's campaign responded with, "Until Bernie Sanders changes his tone, she will not debate him."
Hmm.
So that's the bad thing. The bad thing is the response from the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Yeah.
Not saying that she herself said it, not even, like, the campaign's official stance was that, however.
That's a pretty dumb way to turn down a debate challenge.
It gets better.
All right.
2008, Hillary Clinton said, and I quote, "You should be prepared to debate at any time."
Yeah.
Alright.
You should be, actually.
Here's the message. We've got my client using passwords he said to his advantage,
mm-hmm.
and we've got Hillary Clinton forgetting her passwords yet again and putting forth a new message.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is simple. The human race needs to remember what they've said and use what they've said to their own advantage.
Yep.
Reword what you've said to fit another application,
mm-hmm.
remember what you've said, and then respond differently
mm-hmm.
when you just don't want to debate.
A really easy way to do that is be truthful. Because if you tell the truth, it's a lot easier to remember what you've said.
It's true. And but just be mindful of what you say, because what you say has so much power, carries so much weight,
mm-hmm.
especially when it doesn't matter what kind of scope you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Because we affect hundreds of people every day. We might not know that we're directly affecting them.
Mm-hmm.
But what you say has so much power. Our language carries so much just, like,
mm-hmm.
importance. Just remember what you've said.
Mm-hmm.
Be it a liar or the truth. Being truthful, of course, is good. But just remember what you've said. And then keep living your life. Mm-hmm. Don't forget.
Yeah, don't forget.
So, there, John, I've played your game.
It's perfect. You know, maybe if Hillary Clinton would change her tone instead of laughing at her competitors, whatever. Anyway.
Look, I don't want to get too political.
Yeah.
That was just an instance of something that I saw that I was just like, you've got to be fucking kidding me.
Yeah. Also, no, Bernie Sanders doesn't need to change his tone. She just doesn't want to challenge him to a debate because the last time she did that in Flint, Michigan, she lost. And she doesn't want to do that in New York because it's 240 delegates. Whatever.
It's also her home state. You don't want to be embarrassed in your home state. I get the inclination.
Mm-hmm.
But don't attack somebody in your rejection to debate them.
Yep.
He's been nothing but civil.
Mm-hmm.
They claim, like, they cited, oh, he started running negative ads. The negative ads were just highlighting their positions on issues.
Yep.
So if your positions on issues, you perceive that as being negative, maybe you should change your positions on those issues.
Political credits.
Anyway. Done with politics.
Yes.
I'm not even saying I'm not for or against anyone in this race.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just pointing out something stupid.
Just pointing out something stupid and ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well.
Man, what an episode this might have been.
That got pretty heated.
Yeah.
You know, it really seems like right there we took a break, then we're just saying this separate from anything else. We didn't know. We actually just took a breath.
It actually, yeah. This is seconds after we started doing.
No. It's real.
My brain's melted.
Anyway,
I think it's time for the classic segment.
Oh, what's happening?
I know you might be a little confused. You might have been lost at the top of the episode. the familiar blanket of security wasn't there for you.
I was missing something.
You know what you were missing, John?
What?
Me asking, what are we doing?
What are we doing, Henry?
We're going to end the show.
Okay.
So this has been Zero Credits. I've been Henry.
I've been John.
And together we've been Henry and John. Wait. I've never done that before.
Yeah, no.
That's weird. That's what I say at the beginning of the show.
Perfect. It's circular, like Mind Game.
Oh, it's Mind Game. If you liked the episode, like the episode on iTunes or Facebook or Twitter or whatever.
You know, remember your words and be honest. If you liked something, actually like it. Hit the like button.
Yeah. And if you want some, if you want to practice remembering your words, leave a comment.
Leave a comment, and then you can remember that later.
When your friends ask you, oh, are there any podcasts, just say the comment you said again.
And you know, if you want to devote your life to perfecting a craft, that craft might as well be subscribing to us.
That's true. You can perfect that in no time.
And you can remember our words on our Twitter.
That we have.
At ZCPCWHJ.
The bit is where I usually repeat it, but I don't feel like it today, so...
So follow us on Twitter at ZCPCWHJ. That's Z as in zebra, P as in pony, H... Wait. Shit.
You know, you don't get another redo.
All right.
They will have to figure out the rest of the letters.
Okay.
All right.
Remember my words.
Remember our words and not our faces. Goodbye.
Later. Well, hey there, Henry.
Oh, hi there, John.
This is a commercial.
Good.
Today, I'm going to talk to you about a little thing called Taco Bell. No, not Taco Bell. Shit.